It's Marisa here with you on 3TFM, and my guest today is a friend of the show. He's been on the show before. He's a psychologist specialising in the treatment of anxiety disorders. He's author of the Panic Attacks Workbook, and now, brand new, number one title, I can say that, The Worry Trick, Dr. David Carbonell. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. So, you've been on the show before talking previously about how to deal with and get over panic attacks, but you have this new book out called The Worry Trick, which is all about dealing more with a kind of ongoing problem with worry as opposed to the kind of panic attack that people can get. So, quickly tell me what the differences are between the two to start off.
Sure. Well, everyone that has some kind of trouble with an anxiety or an anxiety disorder, if you will, they all have a lot of worry. But with most of the disorders, say with panic disorder, they worry about having a panic attack. And if they have a phobia of dogs, they worry about encountering a dog. Generalized anxiety disorder is a little different. This is a problem in which the main feature is worry. And people worry about different topics. Maybe they stay for 6 months on one topic, but over time they go through episodes, and their whole trouble is worry. They aren't people who have a problem that they worry about, like somebody with panic attacks. These are people whose main problem is worrying, and it affects them on a daily basis. It keeps their anxiety level higher than it needs to be. It gives them low-level physical symptoms that never seem to subside. It disrupts their sleep, and so on. But the main trouble they have is constantly in their mind, always having this what if this and what if that kind of thinking that bothers them. And so that's the focus, all that what if kind of worry. So this book is written for anyone who struggles with worry, and especially people whose problem is kind of a pure worry.
And what do you think the thing is that keeps the worry there? Because some people could worry about natural things, like if they've got exams coming up for a short while, they might worry about that, or a hospital appointment, and then that worry will go when that thing has happened. But then other people seem to hang on to worry, and then it will move to something else. What is it that they're doing differently?
Well, one of the things that happens is, most problems in life, they come along. We have exams, we have job reviews, we have this or that. Most things come up and we solve them and move on. People who have been doing a lot of worrying about those events, when they manage to pass the exam, when they manage to keep their job, in a very real way, they kind of think somehow that the worry had something to do with their success. And they have thoughts like, it helps if I expect the worst. And if something bad happens and I hadn't worried about it, that makes it my fault. So they're kind of motivated to worry, almost as if they think that keeps them out of trouble. And of course it doesn't. But then they always have the thought, it can't hurt. It can't hurt. Let's be sure, a knock on wood kind of thing. So they tend in the moment to think that somehow when they're worrying, they're doing something that's going to help them. And they have the idea that worry shows you care. If you don't worry about something, then you don't care. And they're afraid, literally, that God or the universe will notice, well, this one over here on First Avenue, he's not worrying. Let's give him some trouble. So they think worry somehow keeps them out of trouble. That's what keeps it going.
And so what would be also common mistakes that people would make when they realize that they're maybe worrying too much about something? So then they've maybe got the opposing thing of, well, I think this might keep me safe, but on the other hand, I can't worry like this anymore, so they try and stop. Mm-hmm. What are some of the common mistakes that people make in trying to get over this worry, whatever it may be about, that actually has the opposite effect?
Well, overall, the most common mistake is they try and deal with their thoughts the same way they would deal with an object in their environment. So if you woke up one morning and looked out on your lawn and saw someone had thrown some trash on your lawn, you could go out and pick up the trash and put it in the dustbin. And when that got taken away, that trash is never coming back. You can effectively throw that out and make it stick. They try and do that with their thoughts. They notice an unhappy and unwelcome thought that they don't want. What if I get ill, or what if I get fired? They literally try and push that thought out of their mind. And unlike the trash, which you can push away, the thought acts more like a boomerang. The more you try and push it away, the more persistent it becomes. So fundamentally, they try and throw out and keep away all the thoughts they don't want, and that causes them more trouble.
And one of the things is there's some schools of thought that say that if you rationalize the thought, do a bit of restructuring of the thought, that, you know, you can say, well, this actually, like, my experience is that this thing won't happen, or, you know, something like that, then that's a good way. Being logical is a good way of dealing with that. But you come up with another theory on that, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, I'm not nearly so enthused about, you know, what in cognitive behavioral terms we would call cognitive restructuring, correcting, you know, finding the errors in my thinking and changing them. That will work, and that works for a lot of people with a lot of problems. When it comes to chronic anxiety, somebody that worries a lot, if that's going to work, that should work pretty quickly. I see so many people who come to me who have heard about cognitive restructuring and been instructed in how to use it, and for them it becomes another way that they try and fight their thoughts off. So basically, it's just taken too far. They kind of run it into the ground. They lose sight of the overall goal, which is to flexibly respond to whatever goes in my mind. And they have the idea, I got to get my mind to be purely logical. That's not going to happen. So I think so many people, you know, if it's going to work for you, it works, and then you move on. If 6 months later, a year later, you're still struggling to make your thoughts more rational, then that's not going to be the way to go for you.
Okay, so what would be a better way of handling these thoughts? Because I'm imagining that with the thoughts that could, I guess, be quite disturbing, depending on what you're worrying about at the time, you'll get the physical body sensations perhaps as well, which will add to it. It will make you tired and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So what's a better way of dealing with this ongoing worrisome thoughts?
Well, big picture, we need to step back and recognize what's happening when I have a thought. And what's happening here with all of these, you know, what if kinds of thoughts, is simply that a person is experiencing a symptom of anxiety. And it means the same thing as other kinds of symptoms of anxiety. For me to have a what if thought, and that's almost always how these worries come to people, they're preceded by the words what if. To have a worrisome thought like that means the same thing as if I get sweaty palms, or my breathing gets a little shallow and labored, or my stomach feels kind of crampy. What does it really mean? It means I'm nervous. That's all it means. If I have this persistent thought, what if I get fired and I've been worried about getting fired for the last couple of years, or what if I flunk an exam and yet I'm an A student for the last 2.5 years? Those thoughts aren't valid predictions that I'm about to lose my job or fail an exam. What that thought means is, I'm nervous. It means the same thing as sweaty palms, and that's how we have to respond to it, responding to the fact, right now I'm feeling nervous, as compared to, oh no, I just got a telegram from God that I'm going to flunk out of school.
And so by becoming more accepting, over time, what impact may that have on the worries or the person on a bigger level?
Well, it reduces their significance. Now I can take this more in stride. I liken it to what a performer might do when being heckled from the audience. The last thing you want to do if you're a performer is get into a fight with the heckler, because then you're not doing your show anymore. And it's much easier for the heckler to persist if you give him that kind of status. The best thing to do with heckling is to work that heckling into the routine. And so here we want to work the nervousness into the routine. Yes, once again, I'm having those thoughts of doom and disaster. I'm kind of nervous right now. Oh, well, so be it. It's okay to be nervous rather than trying so hard to change my thoughts, because then I just invite more heckling. Then I keep restoring the power of those thoughts. So we want to notice the thought, and particularly notice that what if intro, because that's a very important part of worrying. Accept the fact that, okay, right now I'm feeling nervous, and now how shall I respond to that symptom? And I want, you know, ideally, I could respond to that symptom in some kind of accepting and preferably playful manner, rather than taking the apparent content of the words seriously.
And what's your views on medication? Because a lot of people will maybe go to their GP, and the first thing that they might say before referring for counselling might be, okay, well, let's put you on an antidepressant, that will help.
Yes. Well, in the U.S., and I suppose in the U.K., it's probably similar, our healthcare system is really split between professionals who provide medication and professionals who treat these problems in a different manner. I'm one of the professionals that treats it in a different manner. It's my view that these medications are overprescribed, that because people access the healthcare system often by going first to their physician, that often means that that's the first, maybe the only treatment option they get offered. And that's really a shame. That ought to be further down the list. Those medications, I think, are better reserved for people who don't get good results from the type of cognitive behavioral and treatments that I'm talking about, because they come without side effects, they come without dependency. To my mind, it would be much better to start with the least intrusive treatments, and then if you find that doesn't work, then consider the medication.
So overall, what your book is all about is that it is a trick, because that is the title of the book, The Worry Trick,
mm-hmm.
That it is about identifying, you know, that some of these scary thoughts that you might have quite often, I mean, they could, I guess this could be happening quite often throughout the day for someone, that it doesn't need to take over your life in such a way of trying to get rid of the thoughts, that, you know, gradually if you accept them more, you can get on with your life in a better way.
Absolutely, absolutely. People don't control their thoughts. And I think a lot of people assume they ought to be able to, that they think they should be in control themselves, and that means controlling their thoughts. And no one controls their thoughts. What you control is what you do with your hands and your feet and probably your mouth, but nobody controls their thoughts. It's simple enough to demonstrate. Don't think about bangers and mash. Is that something you eat over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, try not thinking of that. And there you go. You got plates of bangers and mash, whatever that happens to be.
Yeah.
So we don't control our thoughts the way we control what we do with our hands. And mm-hmm. when we try to, or when we think we should, that's when we get into trouble. Now, the worry trick refers specifically to this. A person will have a worrisome thought, a what-if thought, and they'll try and prove that's not going to happen, and they find that they can't. And they take that failure to prove that it's not going to happen, they take that as evidence that it is going to happen. When all that really is nobody knows the future. We can't prove anything isn't going to happen in the future. And so, strictly speaking, in terms of the trick, they experience doubt, and they take that to mean danger. And it just means you can't prove what's something that's not going to happen.
So, for anyone that would like to get a copy of the book and also, you know, check out a lot of the self-help tips that are on your website, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, best way is to just go to anxietycoach.com. They're on the World Wide Web, www.anxietycoach.com. There's a wealth of free self-help materials on the website for all the anxiety disorders, for social anxiety disorder, OCD, panic disorder, generalized anxiety disorder. My books are also available for sale there. And, you know, for those of you in countries where the book hasn't arrived yet, we will ship it to you. So
there you go. And it's available on Kindle as well.
Yes, it's available on wherever quality books are sold.
Exactly. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Dr. David Carbonell, thank you very much.
Oh, I enjoyed it thoroughly. Oh, let's not wait 6 years till the next time.